And that's the happy music that means it's time again for Pop Culture Happy Hour. I'm Linda Holmes. I'm the editor of NPR's pop culture and entertainment blog, Monkey See. And I am here around the table with my pals and Pop Culture Happy Hour compatriots, Stephen Thompson. Stephen, how are you?
Oh, I'm fantastic, Linda.
And what do you do at NPR, Stephen?
I am an editor at NPR Music.
Trey Graham, how about you?
Oh, I'm an editor of the Shiny Movie Picture Things.
Oh, awesome. And you're also my editor at Monkey See, as I recall.
It's true, I do that.
It's true, you do that. Glenn Weldon, what do you do for NPR?
I write about comics for the website and also about real books as well.
Real books?
I did that just to get that reaction.
I've decided to write you angry mail yourself and your interests.
I was going to say, my friend Glenn Weldon will be very offended by what you just said.
Exactly. Oh, no, let's do this. I'm ready to squeeze the end cap on this business.
Oh, my God.
Was that the insidiest inside
that
joke
was so
that's ever
inside.
Been inside?
Okay.
All right.
Very briefly, a friend forwarded me a link to a site that is in some Nordic language. It's one with
Finnish.
A lot of dots.
Finnish.
Okay.
It's in Finnish.
All I know is that all the O's look like no smoking signs.
Yes.
It said in Finnish something about us. So when you Google translate it, it comes out to, among other things, that these four either do or do not squeeze the end cap on a business trip. Damn,
you know,
right we do.
You know what? I was just on a business trip, and I can tell you that the end cap was squeezed like nobody's business.
Repeatedly.
I would love to know.
Whether that's dirty or not.
I would love to know why.
May not be dirty, but the part where they were talking about putting our buttons on someone else's ears, yeah. I'm fairly certain that was not safe for children.
Putting their own buttons on your ears.
Yes. Yeah, there you
like
go.
That. It was.
You gotta love Google Translate.
If only I could.
Yeah, my guess is it's very, very pretty in Finnish.
Yes.
I'll bet.
But it was confusing, and I think we have decided that squeezing the end cap is
on a business trip.
On a business trip. On his business trip.
And that's my new euphemism
and
of choice.
If by any chance you are the blogger who wrote the original post and your English is good enough for you to tell us what you said about us, please
and
write
I would
us.
Think if your English weren't good
say,
enough,
right.
why would you be listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour?
Okay,
because
so you can just cut
actually,
that part right out and we'll say this again.
We don't actually make, it's not dubbed in Finnish for our
Are you
Finnish
sure?
audiences.
Darn, we have to get marketing on that.
Yeah.
So. That's true. So, among other things coming up this weekend is Halloween.
Mm.
What? Mm.
So, this is our Halloween and fear-oriented podcast.
We are nothing if not current.
We are of the moment, as they say.
Torn from the headlines.
Torn from the headlines. This week's headline, it's Halloween.
That's really a lame local newspaper somewhere.
That should be the headline in the newspaper, it's Halloween.
Banner headline.
Or like, it Halloween.
Yeah, exactly. Halloween comes again. October 31st turns out to be Halloween again. And so what we're going to talk about first today is paralyzing fear. Of course, pop culture-based paralyzing fear. We all have paralyzing fears of things having nothing to do
with
pop culture.
That's right.
Such as my paralyzing fear of spiders, which has largely been eradicated by the fact that I live in a basement apartment and I now see spiders all the time.
That's right.
Desensitization.
So I now
it's sort of like being thrown into the pit of snakes.
Exactly.
As a way to get over your fears.
So I now simply look at them and say, not another giant spider in my bed. And then I, grab them up with a tissue and, throw them out and usually apologize as I'm doing
it. Are we just going to talk about our actual non-pop culture related paralyzing fears? Because for me, I was bitten by a hornet when I was 4. And to this day, if a fly buzzes by my ear, I emit an incredibly manly shriek. It kind of sounds a little something like...
I have a paralyzing fear of the look that is on our producer, Mike. So I'm going to move us along. Pop culture fear can be, first one, childhood one, something based in popular culture and entertainment that gives you fear. All right, I'm going to start with you, Glenn. Why don't you tell us about a pop culture-based fear?
All right, there's a short answer and there's a long answer. The short answer...
There always is.
There always is. Short answer is Bing Crosby.
Your fear is of Bing Crosby?
Well,
wow.
If you ask what haunts my unquiet dreams...
They call that white a Christmasophobia.
It is Der Bingle, the Bingster.
Der Bingle.
Oh, dear God.
We're kind of violating my own rule here, because when I suggested this topic, I wanted it to be things like that aren't really scary, but that are scary to kids.
Right.
But this thing that I'm going to talk about is ostensibly scary. I think it is. White Christmas. That's a horror film, right? Right? Okay. What I'm actually going to talk about is the 1949 short Legend of Sleepy Hollow, which has Bing Crosby narrating and singing as Brom Bones. We all remember it's based on the Washington Irving story, in which Ichabod Crane is a schoolteacher vying for the attention of Katrina Van Tassel against Brom Bones, the town rowdy. And I'm not going to go out and say that Washington Irving is a fascist. But let's just unpack this for a second. We are
We'll just be hanging out.
Is there a story we need to hear first?
Just
a little lead in.
There's a long story and a short story.
Thank you. Nicely done. Clearly, the author identifies not with Ichabod Crane, who is the ostensible subject of the story, but he's actually the object of the story. He actually identifies with Brom Bones. So you're meant to identify with the handsome, lantern-jawed, muscular town rowdy.
And why wouldn't I?
And I was going to say, why would we not?
Well, see, this is the thing. Who is going for Katrina, and what he must do to effect the thing he needs to do is drive the funny-looking dude out of town. The funny-looking dude, who, by the way, is also the schoolteacher, representing the life of the mind, representing intellectualism.
Academia.
Exactly. Uh-huh. So, no, you chase the funny-looking dude out of town so you and Katrina can have perfect-looking kids. It's a eugenics tract, basically.
See, this
There's
is
not a
you...
lot of daylight. You know, for a guy named Irving, this guy is not a friend to nerds. Friend to nerds is Washington Irving. But the thing that is...
Irving is his last name.
I understand. The thing that's terrifying...
It's like if my name were John Poindexter.
Exactly.
It wouldn't necessarily
You'd
mean that I
would feel the empathy. It'd still be something. There'd be a frisson. Sure. There would be. So the scary thing isn't the chase, which takes up most of the running time. It is the song that Brom/Bing sings about the Headless Horseman. Now, this is not a scary song. It is basically a jazz number. It's a traditional Knickerbocker Dutch... Dutch colonial.
It's not your
jazz
one, Mr. Headless Horseman.
No. It's filled with all this sort of hepcat 1949 lingo with, like, you know, he's holding a noggin in his hand and starts off with the when the spooks have a midnight jamboree and he does jazz hands. Nothing about this is scary. But what happens almost at the very end of the song, in the second to last verse, something switches, and there is a phrase, a musical phrase, midway through this verse, 8 notes, which have burrowed their way inside my head and have lived there for lo these many years. Mike, you want to cue it up? See if you can tell where it happens.
So when you're riding home tonight, make for the bridge with all your might. He'll be down in the hollow there. He needs your head. Look out! Beware!
Okay.
is it when the chorus from Night of the Bald Mountain comes in?
There is nothing scary until you get to he'll be down in the hollow there. I don't know why, but that phrase, those 8 notes, are what I heard as I was walking home to my friend Eric Felix's house every
and he lived near a hollow.
Through the hollow.
Well, see, I didn't even know what a hollow was. Who knows? I'm 6. What's a hollow?
Right.
And it's still what I hear when I'm, you know, out, let's say, camping.
As you so often do.
Like that. As you do.
As you fell a tree.
But what are the reasons? What are the reasons? When I'm hewing something.
Wrestle a bear with your bare hands.
Oh, gosh. Shot a bear just to watch it die.
I'm watching a lumberjack competition.
But there is the I don't know what it is. And I want the music guys to kind of weigh in on this. Because there's something about that. It has to do with the pentatonic or the diatonic or the gin and tonic or something. There's some music theory stuff going on there. There's something special about those notes.
I think instead of examining the notions of music that create these things, I think we might need to burrow deeper into your brain.
No. It's something. It's not in me.
It's not in the hollow there.
For example, if this was something that was hummed to you as a child, we would have no way of knowing that.
Right.
So we may not be equipped to answer this question for you.
We could, however, refer you to a fairly good shrink.
No, that's okay. All right. No, I'm saying there's it's about that particular phrase.
All right, I want to hear it one more time.
Yeah, let's hear it one more time.
So when you're riding home tonight, make for the bridge with all your might. He'll be down in the hollow there. Keep your head, look out, beware!
Now,
you know what I will say? I will say that the surrounding tissue, the points around the phrase that you've identified, are very kind of kooky and jaunty.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a little minor key. It's a little dirgy in
sure.
the middle.
That's it.
So yeah,
there's
all of a sudden,
and there's a little shriek in the violins, which we have been trained to you know, since Psycho to understand as alarming or startling.
Yeah, because you're exactly right. When look out, beware, that kind of takes all the terror out of it. Yeah. But there's something about that. And it's the whole song's in a minor key, but it's in a jaunty, jazzy minor key. And then all of a sudden, something there happens.
There's suddenly a little bit of pathos. Yes. Like in the middle of the...
It's not the words, I don't think. He'll be down the hollow there, because again, what do I know from hollow? But there's there is something there.
But you've always been...
It's haunted.
Haunted by this.
Afraid of hollows.
Now, do you continue to be afraid of hollows or Bing Crosby?
Both. Well, the duet with David Bowie is terrifying, I think.
That terrifies you?
Oh, come now.
That's always my favorite thing ever.
I was going to offer that up as an antidote.
No, that's actually pretty cool.
I consider it one of the greatest moments in television history, and I still weep every time I see it.
Okay. Oh, goodness.
Well, we're getting all the emotions out, aren't we?
We really are.
If we included every single thing that did that to me, though, it would be a long show.
That's true. You are a weeper.
I am a weeper.
All right, Trey Graham, how about you?
What terrifies me about pop culture? To be honest... everything. It turns out I'm... It turns out I'm kind of a worrier. I see a float in a parade, and I worry that it's going to, go off course and crush people.
Mm-hmm.
I go to the July 4th fireworks on the National Mall, and I idly speculate about what would happen if one of the bombs, came down in the crowd and blew people up. Right now, I'm looking warily at Stephen Thompson's water bottle and wondering how he's going to get out of the studio without being electrocuted. I get this from my mother, apparently.
I can't guarantee that will happen.
So everything in pop culture makes you nervous because everything in the world makes you nervous.
Yes, it's true. I get this from my mom. She has an uncanny ability to walk into a room, size up a situation, and sort of based on the people and the objects and the variables involved to imagine the worst possible outcome.
Well, that is a parental instinct. Yeah.
So when you watch Alf, it's like, what if Alf ate my head or something?
No, ate the cat.
Well, he did. Yeah. There is the whole business about eating cats. Yes, well, what happens if Alf comes and eats my cat? But no, I guess if I had to name just one pop culture artifact, I think I would have to pick the Barbie Loves Beauty styling head.
Hmm. I like it.
This is a thing, if you're not familiar, if you don't have pre-adolescent girls in your life, you may not have run across this thing, but my sister had one. It's, according to its ad copy, it features, quote, fun features dedicated to three core areas of beauty play, hair, nails, and makeup, end quote. According to an expert otherwise known as me, who is looking at a picture of this abomination, this thing is roughly the top 13% of Barbie, mm-hmm. who appears to be struggling to escape from a pool of hot pink quicksand.
Mm-hmm.
She's got one hand up by her throat, and another one up in her hair to show off her nails so that you can paint her nails and brush her hair and make up her face. And it comes with all these little accessories. And like I said, my sister had one of these things, and it was an earlier version when it was somewhat less finished and less polished than it is now. And it had this sort of sick, flesh-tony base, as I recall. I swear to God, it haunts my dreams.
Uh-huh. So what I'm thinking is, if we took the Barbie head and we put it together with the Headless Horseman, you would have Barbie galloping along, and it would suddenly be far less scary because it wouldn't be a Headless Horseman.
You'd have a headless
drag queen. Horseman. It would just be a horseman with Barbie's head.
With fabulous hair.
Yeah. Wow.
So it would just be a cape on a horse with Barbie's head.
Are you trying to solve both of their problems
simultaneously? Yes.
I will say, to address the other issue that you described, I do think sometimes popular culture feeds into the notion of, I'm seeing something happen, how can it go horribly awry? Because you watch, a plane go down on a TV show, you watch a car plummet off a bridge, you watch, buildings collapsing.
Hell's Kitchen.
people getting yelled at for the way they cook. You do start to envision, because you have those moving pictures in your mind that register as memories.
So, Stephen, what is your pop culture fear?
Well, my pop culture fear may be a little bit easier to trace. When I was, I should have talked to my mom before I did this, but when I was, I believe, 4 years old, my family went to Universal Studios and got a tour of the brand new Jaws ride thing, where it's like the little slow-moving roller coaster that takes you through various oogity-boogity, look out, it's a giant shark. And because this was a new attraction, I was, this would have been what? What, 1976, 1977, something like that. And my parents were not necessarily familiar with what this ride fully entailed. They also didn't necessarily strap you in as tight, I think, in those days. My father was holding me kind of in his lap, kind of slightly dangling.
over. Not dang slut. You're either dangling.
Why do I have a feeling I know where? What do I have a feeling
you
I know do, where this is going?
You probably know where this is going. And I don't mean to imply that he was like holding me by the back of my shirt collar as my little feet, as my feet are kicking over the
over the shark tank.
Over the shark tank. Though I'm tempted, though they might have been. You know, so he's sort of holding me as I'm facing out, and then all of a sudden, the animatronic,
the shark comes jumping up out of the water, right?
Plunges out of the water, lurches toward the side of the ride, and it happened to be, you know, sort of like being in the front row at a Gallagher concert. There's always the worst possible place to sit if you are easily startled or four.
or both.
At which point the shark lurches out and goes, you know, like right in my terrified little
4-year-old face.
Gap-toothed, big-eared face. And still have a gap-toothed, big-eared face all these years later.
But that's really never.
Wow. And I think I know what really makes Stephen frightened.
The mirror. So anyway, so for years and years and years, the very thought of watching Jaws or any of its many, many imitators and offspring just absolutely scared the unholy living crap out of me. Mm-hmm. And for a long time as a kid, I had nightmares about being eaten by large fish.
Wow. Jeez.
And now my life is a shambles.
Thanks,
wow.
Dad.
Yeah. So, awesome.
Is yours a little less encounter groupy? Yes.
Yes.
Just wondering.
Yes. When I was little, I had a little golden book version of Babes in Toyland. Now, I no longer remember.
Is that Mike off mic gasping?
I no longer remember anything about Babes in Toyland. I could not tell you anything about Babes in Toyland. And the reason for that is I have avoided it my whole life. Because as a very little kid, like really too little to really remember it consciously, some image or thing in Babes in Toyland, in this little golden book version, struck me as so terrifying that I can immediately, it comes immediately back to me if I think about Babes in Toyland. I think of Babes in Toyland as absolutely monumentally terrifying. And I don't remember what the image is.
You don't remember what it is.
No, oh, I don't.
Linda,
I truly
you
do
know
not.
What we're going to have to
we're going to have. There's going to have to be a search.
Seriously, I work like 15 feet away from you. So at some right. point, I may lurch up behind you and go, oogity boogity, on each page until I've found the one.
Until she falls out of her chair.
There was something in Babes in Toyland, and I remember just thinking it was so frightening that I think of that as like the most frightening, unbelievably terrifying story ever.
What do you picture in your head?
Babes in Toyland has all the toy soldiers, but I think that's just from the cover. I think I'm just remembering the book has toy soldiers.
But that's just the fears that you have
know.
From your time in the Army.
That's right. Yes. I do have a fear of toy soldiers, based on which I hate F.A.O. Schwartz.
All productions of the Nutcracker.
Exactly. I never recovered. I can't think about that story or that movie.
Or hear the music of the band Babes in Toyland.
Or shop at
Toys in Babeland.
I was just going there, damn it.
Yes, in your face.
I was warming up.
Oh, well, too bad.
You lose.
Too bad. Anyway, so that's fine.
So if Steve comes up to you with that book and he just does it like an eye doctor, scare you like this or scare you like this? Scare you like this or scare you like this? One page at a time. That'd be awesome.
No.
Oh, we are getting to the bottom of this.
No. Well, I don't know what to tell you. So now that we have explained all of our pop culture fears, we would love to hear, of course, your pop culture fears. I think it would be great to have everybody contribute their own and tell us what they're afraid of.
Is there a way for them to do that?
There is a way for them to do that. The blog is MonkeyC, and you can find it at npr.org/MonkeyC. And we'll have a place where you can put your comments and tell us what you terribly, terribly fear. Unless it's sharks or Babes in Toyland, in which case, it's done and done. Or Bing Crosby, of course. Or everything. Anyway, the other thing that we were going to talk about this week that I wanted to ask you guys about, it's an ad for Target.
You ready? What's up, Iron Man? I'm going to get my camera.
What happens in this ad for Target is that the mom is putting the Iron Man costume on her kid. The mask is made out of like cardboard or cardstock.
Painted.
Yeah.
And he has up his sleeve, he has a little flashlight so that he has the little thing glowing. And then she has one of these, you put them up in closets, these lights
touch
that you
light.
Push.
Battery powered touch light. Yeah.
And she's clearly got one on his chest that's exactly like ones I have at home. Mm-hmm. And in the commercial, she sets all this up. She's got the kid looking in the mirror. And the kid, of course, looks
miserable
and horrified. And then she says, I'm going to get my camera.
Yeah.
And then she goes away and the little touch light falls off his chest like dunk. And then they cut to, and then you just cut to a photo of a prefab Iron Man costume that you would buy at Target.
The authorized Marvel licensed Iron Man.
Now, thoughts.
Where do we begin?
Yeah, where do you start with this? I mean, aside from the astonishing directness with which this thing seems to celebrate unbridled consumerism, right? And uniformity.
And laziness.
Yeah. You have to just kind of boggle at what it says about the state of
creativity.
Here's one more.
And conformity.
Yeah, because you should have the same Iron Man costume.
As everybody else. I mean, it's the thing, the clearest illustration of the poverty of the modern imagination that I've seen in some times. I mean, one of the reasons I'm passionate about theater is that it is capable of generating these honest emotional moments without ever entirely trying to convince you that what's happening in front of you is real. You know, it shows you outlines and asks you, in fact, requires you to fill in the blanks.
Right.
Well, and each performance is slightly different.
Yes. And your imagination is
right.
Really, really part of what's important. You become part of the work of art. And that's what this commercial says is not necessary.
Well, it's not only not necessary, but it's embarrassing
right,
to your
right,
kid.
Right.
That's the part of it that I have to say, as we're having this conversation, Glenn Weldon is sitting over here with a look on his face like he has something to say. I don't know what it is.
No. I mean, are we? I just don't want to interrupt. Are we done with this sort of treacly, dewy-eyed wallowing in fake nostalgia for some time when you were a kid and you put on an inner tube or something? Are we done? Or is there more?
Because Glenn would like to say
he
wants the Iron Man costume that the guy built from scratch out of like sheet steel and tank parts.
Well, no.
Actually, if we can skip ahead to what's making me happy, it's actually my last good memory of Halloween 1979.
Well, no, but the other thing about it, and I saw sort of a version of this pointed out somewhere. Somebody has said, you know, if you want to make a commercial for Target, you could also make one for making your kid's Halloween costume. And I started to think, like, if you had taken this same Iron Man outfit, you could have shown the mom going around to Target. Mom is buying, like, a pair of red pajamas and a flashlight and touch lights. And the kid is like, when are we going to get my costume? And then at the end, mom whips up the costume.
And look, it's this amazing costume.
And all
costume.
Of a sudden, it looks great. And he looks like Iron Man.
Which, frankly, you could have done with the costume they show in the commercial.
And you still could make it, like, come shop at Target.
Yep.
You could completely invert the point of the commercial by showing the kid in a sea of identical, plasticky, crappy-looking Iron Man costumes.
And which would you probably spend more money on? All the stuff
that mom would make
into the costume, or the plastic bag you put over yourself that looks like Iron Man?
Okay, we about done?
I say this as somebody who never... I mean, my parents... It's not like my parents built elaborate costumes.
Does this mean you don't want to hear about my mother sewing me a Florence Nightingale outfit from scratch?
Look, I'm not going to argue...
the blue dress
or
the,
I think you've been outvoted.
The Halloween that I wrapped myself in a flowered sheet and put a sprig of baby's breath behind my ear and walked around.
Oh, my God.
You've already won the gay off.
Oh, my God.
What were you?
Well, I walked around with my head tilted to the side.
It wasn't
Iron
Man.
Actually, this wasn't Halloween.
I walked around with...
this was Thursday.
Remember, flowered sheet, baby's breath, head tilted to the side. I was the ghost of Laura Ashley.
Oh, my God. I
now,
will say
see,
in,
that's a little arch.
In 1979, speaking of my last good childhood memory, I dressed as Alice Cooper for Halloween. Oh, I was seven because he was on the Muppet Show.
Yeah.
All right, I'm not going to argue that building a costume with your parents is not a great memory, but all y'all are not seeing this from the kid's perspective. You're seeing this through the scrim of adulthood, and look at all these wonderful memories that we're
dewy-eyed,
not building.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, this may be true for other costumes, but for a superhero costume, it is about dressing as Iron Man. It is about being Iron Man.
Yeah,
and every inch, every nanosecond you get away from that perfect ideal is a little death. So what needs to happen
is for it to Ayn Rand.
No. What has to happen is you have to get as close as possible. So when I'm 6 years old, I go to my mom and I say, Batman, I'm going to be Batman this year. And she says to me, well, we'll take your brother's old gray sweatpants and his gray sweatshirt and we'll magic marker a bat on your chest. I said, we'll do what now? Excuse me? Well, I appreciate your enthusiasm, but we're going to look at some other bids, and I appreciate your time. And I went to Woolworths to get the Ben Cooper version of the Batman. Now, you guys remember Ben Cooper costumes? They came with a plastic mask. No. They were basically an asbestos smock. And the Batman costume was not perfect. It had a picture of Batman on his chest. Now, Batman does not wear a picture of himself, on his chest.
Like his ID badge at the Justice League.
Exactly, because it had the word Batman. And on his cow, on the plastic mask, it had a little insignia at his forehead that just said the word Batman. It was like this third eye of shame, of lameness.
So this is also not right.
Right.
And the photo
of Batman actually has a little Olin Mills logo at the bottom.
Neither the sweatpants version nor the version you bought in the store was accurate.
If I was a kid today and had access to these awesome costumes they had, I would so be on it in a second. I don't care. It's like,
no, you're that guy. That's a whole different kind of dewy-eyed...
No. The idea of just being able to really look in the mirror and actually see him without... And Trey, we're not talking about theater. We're talking about a costume. We're talking about dressing up as a kid.
I'm telling you, I'm put my 9-year-old son in a Batman, in a really good Batman suit, he's not going to look like Batman.
I'm just saying, the best Batman costume I ever saw was a guy in the authentic-looking black cowl and a pretty good cape and nothing but a bunch of black latex body paint.
Ba, 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 ba.
You've already won the game off. Well, no. I bought my son's Halloween costume.
Yes, I've seen it.
At Target. And he is dressed as a gigantic banana. And
it is awesome.
You know, often,
you didn't build it out of yellow construction paper, Stephen, so that we could have it all be all wonderful and daddy.
You didn't buy the one from Arrested Development on eBay?
Don't think I wouldn't have. So you're walking around Target with your kids, and you know there's just this process of parenting that is the kind of instinctive no, you know, when an expensive item is held up, and you're no. All of a sudden, my son is holding a $40 banana suit, and there was only one possible answer. He wants to host a YouTube program in which he performs as the host in his banana suit. So he's going to get additional uses out of his banana suit.
Is it possible one of them is going to be protection against being beaten up?
I was going to say, I assume that part of the instinctive parenting response is to say no to that.
Yeah. It is kind of like dressing as the turtle and being tipped on your shell.
You're going to be people stepping on him all night.
So we have voted 3-1 in favor of childhood.
that's fair, actually.
So pretty much 1-3 in favor of consumerism.
Verisimilitude. Yes.
But the point that Stephen was making, though, is that the kid is still not going to look like Iron Man.
Oh, he's going to look awesome. He's going to look so much better than the little flashlight strapped to his wrist. You kidding me?
But it looked so cute.
I thought part of the problem with it.
That's it, but you're an adult. Look at this cute little kid. You're not putting yourself in kid head.
Okay, but let me make a mercilessly pragmatic argument to you. If you're the kid, what do you want most out of Halloween?
Right.
What's your goal?
Candy.
No.
Right? The most candy, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The most and best candy. Yep. If you're...
So I will say, I think leading up to Halloween, my kids have talked more about what they're going
to
wear.
Are you telling me that you give more candy to a cuter homemade costume than you do to
darn
others?
Darn Skippy.
I absolutely would. If you come to my door with the mask and the cardboard apron that has whatever you want to be drawn on it, and, you know, it's not that I won't give you candy. I'll give you candy. But might you get a little bonus candy if you had some kind of really clever...
That's not how I roll.
Exactly.
I just give a lot of candy to everybody.
So...
I judge them. I judge them on how perky they are and how, you know, how...
I will say, yeah, I like to skimp.
Lively.
I skimp. If you come to my door and it's like, I would like some candy, please, trick or treat.
That's me. You know, I come to your house?
No, that wasn't my Glenn. Right. My Glenn is different. My Glenn is
okay,
more...
Okay, I don't need to hear it. Doug and Derek.
my gland is more erudite than the Celentines.
The Celentines, exactly, with like a
the Celentines can take one peanut butter glob. You know those? Not that I buy those, but you know, you know the peanut butter candies with the gunk in them.
I remember my parents refusing to give candy to the kids who came along and put their cigarettes on our windowsill while they waited to get their candy.
Those kids are so much more likely to egg your house.
That's a low bar.
And I'm not saying that I won't give candy to the prefab Iron Man costume. I'm just saying, might you get a bonus if I thought your costume was really clever? Might I throw an extra Reese's in there for you?
Besides,
maybe
this kid who gets the Iron Man costume or the Batman costume is not going to wear it just for Halloween. He's going to wear it a lot. He's going to play with it. He's going to be Batman.
If he grows up to be Glenn Weldon.
No. And these little cute little things you kind of make have a shelf life of one night.
How long do you think the plastic costume from Target's going to last?
Well, that's what I'm saying. I'm saying
it's the cool helmet that the mom made for Iron Man. I would personally wear that helmet around.
I think Glenn is thinking that the choice is between the pajama suit that mom made and a costume made by Industrial Light.
No. I have seen these costumes, and they are awesome.
I don't know about that.
All right, anyway. Well, I'm happy to know that Glenn enjoys a very, very realistic Superman costume, and I look forward to seeing him in one.
That's not going to help.
Now, see, it's fine for other people. Yes. Sauce for the goose should be
you know,
sauce
it's fine for
the
kids. This is I keep trying to impress upon you people to think of the children. Will no one think of the children?
I think of the children dressed as giant bananas.
Yes.
Oh, man.
Anyway.
It is good for the heart.
So, as always, we like to end with something making us happy this week. And I'm going to go around the other way and start with Steven this time because I think I know where we're going with this. And,
oh, well, there are actually many, many directions I could go with it. For one, I could start with Jonah in a giant banana suit.
That's true.
Which will make me endlessly happy this coming Halloween.
Is he leading Chicktopus on a leash?
You know, if I were a craftier fellow, I would make him a Chicktopus costume. You know, somebody wrote in saying that they wanted to draw Chicktopus.
I think that they drew Chicktopus.
I was unclear. I still have to write the person back. Yeah. But if you out there in listener land would like to offer your artist's rendering of Chicktopus, perhaps we could put together some sort of photo gallery.
That's very possible.
So
if you would like to make your... And then Chicktopus, we should mention, came up a couple of podcasts ago.
Right. Chicktopus is a hybrid beast containing the DNA of a chicken and an octopus. And I had originally envisioned Chicktopus as having 8 beaks, but he could also have 8
wings. I think the short version is, if you would like to sketch Chicktopus for us in whatever manner you find appropriate, and then scan it.
And email me
and email it to us.
Yeah,
email it to us.
You can email it to the account that I used for when I was reading, when I was doing that whole crazy shenanigans about reading a book.
The book that you read.
The whole book. No, the book that I'm about 2/5 of the way through. Email StephenReadsABook@gmail.com. Stephen is spelled STEPHEN.
Your graphic renderings of Chicktopus are welcome. Anyway, go ahead, Stephen.
First of all, that concept is making me happy. And we just came up with that on the fly. Several things have made me happy. One is Brett Favre eating it on Sunday Night Football.
Eat it, Brett Favre. That's what I like to say.
Eat it, Brett Favre. Yeah, I may or may not, at the end of the game, may have stood about a foot away from my big screen TV, pointed my finger at the screen, and said, in your effing face, I didn't put it that way, in your effing face, in your effing face, and then realized that maybe, just maybe, not all of my issues were with Brett Favre. That is what is making me happy this week.
So that's what's making you happy this week?
Among other things, I also went to New York for the CMJ Music Festival, visited my old friends, my former colleagues at The Onion.
And saw some good bands.
Saw some good bands, but I also took a little detour to The Onion office and participated in Whiskey Friday, in which the employees of The Onion gather around
and whisk things.
And whisk things.
They beat and fold.
Very good, Steve.
So that also made me happy, among many other things.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful.
Now, is there anything that's making you happy in which our listening audience can share?
No. Well, they can buy a bottle of whiskey.
Everyone can share in football.
All right. Fine.
How about you, Trey Graham?
Everybody loves football.
You know what? What is making me happy this week, and I realize that I'm a little bit late to this bandwagon, although I don't know what kind of ratings it's getting. I should have looked this up before we came in. But what's making me happy this week is The Big C on Showtime. The husband has been TiVoing it, and We've been kind of catching up on it in big chunks. And last night we got to the episode where John Benjamin Hickey's character, who's kind of a conscientious objector to life.
Mm-hmm.
He lives in the open. He's sort of chosen homelessness because he objects to what we were describing earlier, consumer society, and
right.
you know, and what we as a country are doing to the environment. This character is
so he makes his Iron Man costume out of leaves.
He does. He has made it out of bark and twigs.
True.
No, but he's He's gotten beat up for his sleeping bag. Someone has stolen his sleeping bag in the park, and he's gotten beaten up. He comes to his sister's house, his sister, the main character, played by Laura Linney, and she tapes him up, and she lets him stay in the backyard for a little while. And in one of the middle scenes of this episode, he has picked himself a salad out of the weeds growing in her lawn. He's sitting at her kitchen table, and you have to understand that she's a real OCD type. She's really, really perfect and tightly wound, and everything is spick and span. So he's picked himself a salad of weeds, and he's eating it off of one of her plates with one of her forks, and in the middle of a conversation with her at her kitchen table, he finds a worm in his salad, and he picks it up off the plate and dangles it in the air and consumes it with great relish after saying, look, protein. And it was just a lovely little moment. And it's the actor is John Benjamin Hickey, who is one of my favorite theater people. He played Cliff in the 1998 Broadway revival of Cabaret and has done some other interesting character work in films and television. And I'm just really a fan right now.
That's great. Uh-huh. The Big C, it is on Showtime.
It is.
And it's been on for a few episodes, but probably if you have Showtime, they may have it on demand or something.
Yeah, I expect
like that.
So.
All right. All right, Glenn Weldon, other than the idea of dressing up as real honest God Iron Man, what is making you happy this week?
All right. We talked about this IRL off air last week, but we'll do it now. Top Chef Just Desserts. I'm liking the show.
I need to see it.
I like the stakes because it's baking, which is famous. Everybody always says about the show, it's baking, so it's chemistry. There are no do-overs. You can't edit the way you can when you're cooking.
Mm-hmm.
You can't correct the flavors up at the end. You're basically pot committed from the get-go. So the stakes are high. The judging kind of blows me away because how can somebody taste 8, 10, 12 desserts in a row without having their taste buds just blown to smithereens? This is a one-way ticket to Diabetesville, these poor people are on. A lot of people have been saying about the show, oh, there's so much drama on it.
I was born at night, but not last night. I'm not going to throw myself on a cross and just go home because I threw away my equipment. And I think you guys are lying.
I mean, all of a sudden, he just started screaming, like, I want my passport, I want my phone, I want my wallet, get me out of here, get me on the plane, get me on the plane, get me on the plane, get me out of here. And then he disappeared.
I think Seth has had such an enormous emotional outbreak that I think everyone feels like a hurricane just erupted out of nowhere and none of us want to have anything to do with it. Can I get a raise of hands for everyone who's sick of it?
You know, we already have to have our minds into the challenges and we want to enjoy ourselves with the challenges, but he takes the fun out of it.
And my point is, well, yeah, I mean, I like the idea of taking the Top Chef franchise down off its little smug little pedestal because it likes to position itself as we're not like other reality
shows.
We're a
boutique reality show.
Exactly. We're about people creating. We're not like other reality shows. Well, you are, Blanche. You are like other reality shows. I just won the guy off. the DNA of this show. Let's remember the DNA of Real World, of Temptation Island, of Jersey Shore. It's all in there. Don't pretend like it's not.
Right.
And seeing the guy, Seth, have his emotional collapse over the course of several episodes, each week bringing a new manifestation of his emotional collapse, was fascinating. It was train wreck television, but I like kind of mixing the high and the low. And of course, we're talking about reality television, so it's the low and not quite so low.
Those brows are situated closer together.
I'm fascinated by it. I love it.
That's excellent.
I really want to see this one, and I've tried to go back and catch up, and I'm finding it difficult to locate. But are they showing that in like gigantic blocks of reruns?
I wouldn't put it
not
past
gigantic them. Blocks that I not regularly, but I'm sure at some point they will.
If only I could find many, many hours to sit consecutively on my couch.
Right?
I just don't know.
All right. Well, what is making me happy this week, I have to credit lovely comedian type Dave Holmes and his Twitter feed. No relation to me, by the way. He tweeted about this woman who has this amazing, amazing set of videos to promote her amazing, amazing book.
Hi, I'm Catherine. I wrote the book, The Single Girl's Guide to Meeting European Men. Oktoberfest in Munich, Germany is coming right up. The 16 to 18 day festival attracts about 6 million people. It begins around the third week in September, depending on the year. This festival should be called Manfest. Guys absolutely love it. Well, why wouldn't they? When most men hear the word beer, that is all the coaxing they need. Wow. And Oktoberfest is all about beer. So,
Thompson, she's talking directly to you.
I was going
to
say.
So her name, believe it or not, is Catherine Chloe Cahoon.
It so is.
And Gahool. Catherine Chloe Gahool.
Is that an owl? You're dropping a little owl reference on us?
And when Dave Holmes posted this, he made the very excellent point that he could not tell whether he more wanted her to be for real or wanted her to be an incredible comic genius.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It is a real book. You can buy it on Amazon. I think she is serious. Now, she has posted a little thing where she says, of course my videos are supposed to be funny, because her videos sort of went viral. Her videos sort of went viral, so she's been doing this thing. She says, a lot of people want to know whether my videos are real. Of course they're parodies, she says, and by which she means exaggerated.
Right. She means fun.
I don't think the whole thing is a put-on, tragically. And these videos are outrageous. They are so great. She's got the one about Oktoberfest. She's got ones about meeting guys in all various different kinds of places in Europe. Single Girl's Guide to Meeting European Men.
Right. I mean, and she's also posing. That's what that's the thing that's happening in each shot. She has a different sort of pageant stance up against a staircase. Her lawn. It's just...
She's in this little slightly too short flowery dress, and it's just...
Aren't European men just laser-focused on naive American women traveling abroad?
It's the sort of thing where you think... How could anyone have thought you needed this book? But then you think, I needed this book so bad. Like, not for its advice, but just for its existence. I mean, Catherine Chloe Cahoon is doing a great service for all of us, not those of us who want to meet European men, but those of us who want to find the true genius of YouTube videos, which is... some blonde lady talking about how, you know, and then she'll do a little bit where she'll be like, and men will come up and offer you beers. And then, like, two dudes will come up with beers and hand them to her. And she'll be like, thanks, fellas. And then it's
awesome.
So genius. Like I said, the videos have been somewhat popular over the last week or so. So if you go and read her Amazon reviews, they're all from people who have been watching this. So they're all like, this is the smartest book I've ever read. This book was touching, moving. It educated me beyond my wildest dreams. So they're all from people who find her
hilarious.
Hilarious. So I strongly recommend it. Catherine Chloe Cahoon, The Single Girl's Guide to Meeting European Men. That's what's making me incredibly happy this week.
Sold.
And thanks again to Dave Holmes. So that's it for this week's Pop Culture Happy Hour. You can follow all of us on Twitter. You can follow the blog at NPR Monkey C. How about you, Stephen?
You can follow me on Twitter at I Dislike Stephen. That's spelled STEPHEN.
How about you, Trey Graham?
And I have a Twitter handle that is spelled Trey Graham, and it's
Trey with the knee, then Graham like the cracker.
That never gets old.
How about you, Glenn Weldon?
It's at GH Weldon.
GH Weldon. That's WELDON. And you can also follow our inimitable producer, Mike Katziff, Mike KATZIF, whose band Hello Come In provides our kicky happy music. And thanks to all of you guys for coming by.
Thank you.
Always a pleasure. This business trip has been squeezed on its end cap.
Up in here.
And thanks to everybody for listening, and we will see you next time.